Are you that one friend in the friend group that loves to treat yourself? It's okay. You can be the one to refuse making coffee at home because there's a fancy coffee shop downstairs. Or opting for the extra legroom, I've done it, on the plane because your vacation is starting now, not later. Or buying extra when that certain something's on sale because it's saving money. Well, if you're treating yourself to the top options in everything in life, then why settle when finding a doctor? It is your health, after all. Enter ZocDoc, the place where you can find and book tens of thousands of top-tier doctors, all with verified patient reviews. So don't settle. Go for the best and find the right doctor for you with ZocDoc. With ZocDoc, you've got more options than you know. ZocDoc is a free app and a website where you can search and compare highly rated in-network doctors near you and instantly book appointments with them online. All the docs have verified reviews from actual real patients. You can filter it for those that take your insurance, those that are located near you, or treat specific conditions you're looking for. I found it incredibly easy to use, and you will too. Go to ZocDoc.com/beyond and download the ZocDoc app for free. Then find and book a top-rated doctor today. That's ZocDoc.com/beyond. ZocDoc.com/beyond. Hello and welcome back to another episode of Beyond the To-Do List. I'm your host, Eric Fisher, and this is the show where I talk to the people behind the productivity. This week, in honor of next week's episode, when I am speaking again with Mike Sturm, this week I'm revisiting a conversation I had with Mike Sturm about his collection of essays, Be, Think, Do, Deeper Essays on Personal Development and Productivity. And this was a really great conversation for me personally to revisit at this time. Right now, reevaluating things, reprioritizing things, and assessing the overall role and definition of the word productivity in my life is pretty big. I think it is for a lot of other people too. I hope it is for you. And so I thought this would make sense to revisit Be, Think, Do. And that's exactly what we do in this conversation with Mike. We talk about what each of those components of being, thinking, and doing make up what portion of productivity, because it's not all about just doing things. It's also about thinking, and it's also sometimes just about being. But it's not just about being in a passive way, but being in an intentional way. And these three things fold in on each other and aid each other in being done and getting done. But also, it's a really great conversation to go through again before listening to next week's episode with Mike Sturm on his new book, The Wabi Sabi Way, which was also a great conversation to have with Mike Sturm. This week, it is my privilege to welcome to the show, for the first time, Mike Sturm. Mike, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me, Eric.
All right. So I don't know how long I've been aware of you. I just know that I get your newsletter in my inbox and knew that at some point I'd have to have you on. And then turns out you were writing a book and you came out with one, and that's usually the perfect time for anybody to show up on anything, right? Is they have something to let people know they did. So let's talk about this book, Be, Think, Do. Obviously, you know, people who listen to this show know those are the words right there, being and thinking and doing. It's the how are we to be, and all about how, you know, it's not just about doing the right things or thinking the right things. And I want to break those down. Each one of those things is interesting in and of itself. And I think they actually kind of all go hand in hand. Why do those three things go together in terms of the elements of productivity?
Well, for me, those were the three things that are, I guess I'll say, I like to break things down into the simplest components. And I try to get, because my background is in philosophy, academic philosophy, and there's a lot of logical rigor there where, you know, Occam's razor is in full effect. It is, you know, let's break things down to the simplest elements and no more, and of course, no less. And so when I started to look at my catalog of the things that I've written about, almost all of it is on self-improvement, productivity, all that stuff you mentioned, and it gets into those debates that you were mentioning. And I just started to gather the ones that I thought were good, because there's some stuff that's not great. You know, I was just thinking through some things, and I published an essay. But the ones that I thought were really good and that got a lot of response and engagement, they kind of started to go into three different areas. There was the things that were about just being a certain way or being a certain kind of person. And then there was stuff that was about thinking, and they probably mostly involved thinking in some way, because I'm just infatuated with thinking, how to do it better, how we just do it by default, and then just what's happening when we're thinking. And then the doing part, which is the part that I'm probably worst at in my own personal life. I overthink things and I don't really do a lot of stuff. That's something that I'm always interested in from a standpoint of being a learner. I want to figure out how to do, not necessarily more, but at least do more of the things that are really valuable and that I want to do. And then as I started to separate these essays, I found that, man, what I really also want to say in the book is not just productivity and personal development really just falls in these three realms. There's an order of operations. And in the intro, I lay that out and talk about how, if you can, read the book in order from the be, think, do. So be first, then think, then do, because I think we tend to mix those things up. And if I had to be like Dr. Productivity and diagnose an issue that I see as I read stuff about productivity and personal growth, one of the things that I see is that we get that order of operations mixed up. We think that first we've got to think and do, sometimes do before think, and only after we're done doing some thinking and some doing, that's when we can be. But that's mixed up. We should be focusing on just being first, being ourselves, being comfortable, having a good relationship with ourselves. That's where like meditation and journaling comes in, as foundational practices, and focus on that for a long time. And then after that, the thinking and the doing comes in.
When it comes to the normal approach that people have, say, why, you know, the why behind maybe they listen to the show is that they want to get something out of it that's going to help them do something more, do something faster, do something better, or have it done, and then be able to appreciate that it's done and be after the doing is done, you know, let alone maybe skip thinking. And yeah. I love that you're approaching it from the opposite way, that in the end, the right actions, the doing, which aren't the be all end all, by the way.
No.
But that if you must act, if you must do it after you've thought, and think after you've been.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It's tough to come up with the verb.
Yes.
I stumbled with that as I was writing. Like, what's the verb here? It's be, sure, but what about the past tense and the present tense? Yeah.
So I think people who are listening to this episode and have listened to a number of other episodes probably are seeing right now that, again, these three things, the being, the thinking, the doing, are where most of the spread of going beyond a to-do list, the title of the show, comes from, is that it's not all about having a list, which is, I would say, maybe comes out of the thinking part and halfway with one foot maybe into the doing side of things. That there's so much more to, quote, being productive than just the doing, just the thinking, and even the being, as we often think about when it comes to, you know, because we've talked about meditation and other mindful practices in that sense on this show before, that it's a combination of all of the above.
Yeah, absolutely. When you first meditate, if you've never meditated, if you're the type of person that's never meditated, or if you've meditated and not gotten anywhere, then the first time that you do it, you're either going to have a revelation about yourself, or you're going to be really angry or scared or have a strong emotion because you're unfamiliar with who exactly you are. You haven't sat down, stopped doing, and stopped thinking, and just observed yourself being yourself. You know, no pretense, no context. You're just sitting there breathing, and you're watching all these crazy, stupid, perverted, dumb thoughts pop in and out of your head. And there's all these emotions that arise and fall away. And you're like, what is all this crap? But if you pretend that it's not there and you just try to think and do all the time, you'll find that you get in your own way all the time. You're trying to do things and think about things that don't mesh with, or at least are not harmonized with, who you are underneath all the actions and the thoughts you have. And that's, for me, that's the important part. And really, like, for someone who's just getting started in that, in the space, reading about personal improvement and productivity and all that stuff, you can trash this, the second two parts of the book and focus on the first one, and then find more literature like it. You don't have to meditate every day. You don't have to keep a journal every day, but at least do some of the activities that involve sitting silently on your own and just observing how you're feeling and what you're thinking, and then maybe recording some of it. It's just, it's a basic practice.
I want to come back to the be and the think and the do and kind of spend a little more time in that area. But I also want to go into this. I mentioned this earlier, this idea of productivity and the way that we've kind of gotten to this word being the catch-all of, you know, what people don't even necessarily know how to describe in terms of what they mean by that. You know, they say productivity and they think, doing things better, doing the right things, doing things faster, getting things done, as one book states, and that there's more to it than that. That, you know, my friend Mike Vardy, he always talks about time and attention, and there's efficiency experts, and there's effectiveness, and there's, you know, and it has to do with, and you've got some thoughts on this, it has to do with wrestling, I think, in a sense, some of what the be, think, do is that you're already kind of grouping your writing into in terms of the book. But this idea of what is the definition of the word productivity? And honestly, I don't know. I think we can get tangled up in semantics.
And we will.
And the words. But well, and we do. But what I'm saying is I don't know that I don't know. You talk. My thought is, my final thought before I hand the mic back over is, I feel like a lot of the time it's wasteful to spend the time talking about the differences between these words. Yet at the same time, I think it's incredibly helpful to differentiate what we mean by different words, because you can get better insight and better, better or deeper meaning out of them, so to speak. So
I agree with everything, but then I also disagree with everything.
Okay. So, okay, good.
But yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, yeah, like I mentioned, my background is in philosophy, and it's part of what drew me to that, aside from a professor telling me that that's what I should be doing, was just because I wrap myself up in those debates about the meanings of words, like a warm blanket. I just love that. And it is because, for one, it's fun, right? It's something fun to do, and you could feel engaged and feel smart and like you're really realizing things. But then also it does have impact. And so when you were talking about that, you know, whether or not it's valuable, there's two things that I put in the book that come to mind. There's this, the chapter at the very end, which is a new essay. So everything in the book, except for the introduction pages, there's an intro at the beginning of each section and an intro to the whole book. That's all new stuff. But then all the essays, the numbered chapters, those are all things I've published already. The final one, though, the final numbered chapter, kind of addresses this point that you're talking about. And it doesn't necessarily talk about whether it's worthwhile to define these terms of productivity and efficiency and effectiveness. But it does touch on something that maybe you can use as a guide if you get hung up too much on which one of those words you want to use as a guidepost. And it's something that, as I was struggling to do other things while I was writing this book, I just started to use as my own metric, and that is feeling. I had written this piece a while ago, and it's somewhere up on the internet, and it was tentatively going to be titled "Feelings Are Results Too," because I have I've been told for a long time in my day job, I work in sales for a distribution company, like, results are all that matters, right? Get the results, get the numbers, get the metrics. That's what matters. And I'm just not that type of person. So already, I came out of the gate at that kind of job just, you know, being skeptical of that way of thinking about things. And nothing's really changed my mind in the 9 years or whatever that have come between that time, right? I continue to see people focusing on results when in reality, that's not always the best way to gauge how you're doing, because so much of the stuff is out of your control. It's the markets, it's other people in your organization, other people in your life. It's just, that's not always the best way to go. But what is a good way to go, at least for me, I found recently, is your feeling of engagement. How engaged are you with things that you feel you need to be engaged with? Because at least this way, then you can put forth what you believe to be the proper effort. And even if the results don't come in the way that you desire or the way that you expect, you're being whatever it is that we're trying to be when we talk about productivity, if that makes any sense.
I think so. I think that one of the things, I mean, again, in the end, why I and others go to that place of the three words, be, think, and do, that doing and the results, the end, you know, being the you know, begin with the end in mind, as we sometimes hear.
Yes.
Or, you know, that in the end, again, what are we doing for? What are we doing things for? What is the outcome we're trying to achieve? What is the, quote, goal we're setting? And that it's the outcome, it's the getting to the thing, it's the achievement that is really the thing. Whereas I think what you're saying is screw goals. Like, when it comes down to it, like, sure, make progress, that's great and all, do your best to do that, but in the end, it's about, how do you feel? Like, how are you comfortable with yourself? Are you okay being you know, who you are, you know, and not in a frou-frou way, you know what I mean?
Right, like, right.
In a more centered, like, being accepting, etc. So
yeah, 100%. And that's a large part of why I made that statement earlier about, you know, just get rid of the second two sections of the book, and focusing on the first one is going to be where the bang is for your buck, at least in the beginning. You know, that's tongue in cheek, of course, because I'd like people to read the whole book, but the reason for that is because so much of the things we get tangled up in doing and trying to achieve are because we think that that's going to get us that feeling of comfort and happiness. And I think most importantly, fulfillment, or how, whatever word, again, words, right? Whatever words you want to use to describe. But I think what we're after is a feeling. And it's not pleasure or bodily pleasure or status or something like that. Those are shallow feelings, right? I'm talking about a deeper feeling. And if I had to go back to my previous life in academia, I'd bring forth something like Aristotle's eudaimonia, which is, you know, variously translated, I think the best one I've heard is flourishing. And it's supposed to represent that end of human life, the end goal. So the goals and objectives that you set are not ends in themselves. They're means to that end of eudaimonia, of flourishing, of living a full human life. And the thing about that is the way he talks about it, it's not so much a feeling, although you can feel when it's happening, but it's actually an activity. So it's not getting the objectives, and it's not achieving the goals that is this flourishing or eudaimonia. It is the activity involved in making it happen. And that's what he talks about in terms of building a good life. It's having worthy goals and having objectives that mean something, but then also being able to stop in the middle of that project where you're trying to achieve this goal and be like, you know what, I like doing this. Like, maybe filling out this report or following up with this person is not a great activity. I'm not loving this, but like this process, I love it. I feel fulfilled and I feel whole and I feel complete. And I think that's what I was getting after when I threw feeling into the mix as a metric.
Well, and the way that you're saying that, and I had never heard that that term before, and, you know, flourishing, to me, it sounds like when you're talking about activity, again, that goes back to almost tying that being is also an activity.
Yes.
But it doesn't have to be, but it can be, right?
Yeah.
It's almost it's a choice between I can be, or I can being. almost like doing. I don't know.
Be or be asterisk, right?
Yes,
a little
there
asterisk
you go.
There. Yeah.
Oh gosh, we could definitely dig way too deep here and geek out. I mean, I hope that this is beneficial for people to think about. I mean, again, we can't always, you can't have every episode of a podcast be incredibly practical takeaway steps that are how, you know, do this one thing and earn a quick win, so to speak.
Yes.
As beneficial as that is, though, right? Like, it's still missing something. Yeah, I don't know. There's a deeperness. A deeperness. That's not even a word. There is a depth to this that, you know, is to be had. I mean, again, when we come back to these three words, though, productivity, efficiency, and effectiveness, I mean, let's quickly define, like, I mean, if you were to define the word productivity, like, what would you say?
The best definition, I'm going to steal here, of course, but the best definition that I've seen is output divided by input. I think that's a great way that most people think about it.
In other words, getting to the root of what the word productivity has in it, which is producing.
Right.
So it's a measure of output divided by input.
Yeah.
I like that. I like that. So then if we take that same definition and kind of then move to the next word, which we don't have to do, but efficiency then, when people hear the word efficiency, they hear the meaning of the word having something to do with doing things quickly, that it was efficiently done. It was quickly done. But that's not necessarily right.
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think the better way to talk about efficiency is basically just doing things in the optimal way or how optimal the process is, right? The fewest steps, the least amount of work, to a point.
Yeah, like the best way that this thing can be done. Like it can't be optimized anymore at this current time. Maybe in the future it can be, but right now it's optimized. Right.
And the important thing is that there's an assumption that, you know, you've settled on whatever the thing is that you're doing. So it has nothing to say, neither of those two things, productivity or efficiency, has anything to say about the quality of the output or the goal that's been chosen.
Yes, exactly. So then effectiveness, that is something where I've heard people say, okay, so if there's the word productivity and that's, me doing things, well, let me put it this way. If productivity and efficiency, people interchange all the time. They say, I'm a productivity expert. This guy's a productivity expert. This person's an efficiency expert. I don't hear about effectiveness experts, somebody who comes in. Although I think in some senses they'd be consultants because they would come in and say, and consultants could be the other two things as well. But a consultant would come in and say, why are you guys not doing this? These things, in other words, the bottom line, what's the most impactful things you could be doing or doing the right things? That I don't necessarily have any kind of qualms about with people's most often chosen definition of the word effectiveness.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't either. I think that's the right way to define it. And I think the reason that most people would say that what you said, which is that I don't often hear about effectiveness experts, and even a lot of consultants wouldn't phrase it that way, is because it's messy work. How long did we spend just talking about what some people would call semantic differences, yes, right, between a couple of things? That's what I believe the work of an effectiveness expert would be, because you've got, just imagine it if you're a consultant, right? You've got to get a bunch of C-suite level people, high driving type A execs in a room, and it's either a business they own or where they're supposed to deliver shareholder value to the board. And they've got to be like, all right, hey, let's sit down for like 3 days, 8 hours a day or whatever, and just talk about whether you've chosen the right goals or not. They're going to be like, are you kidding me? We've got these goals. We got to get the numbers. We got to get the metrics. So it's messy work. It's hard work, and it's a totally different mindset. You've got to be in a totally different headspace, and maybe in physical space, to do that work, to examine the goals and the objectives, to see what the effectiveness is.
When it comes to hiring, don't search for great talent. Match with them, thanks to Indeed. With Indeed, you can ditch that busy work and use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Indeed leverages over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, making their matching engine your go-to to because it's constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use it, the better it gets. I used to be involved giving my input into the hiring process for a few key roles that were connected to mine. And man, do I wish we had Indeed back then, because we could have gotten much higher quality hires using Indeed. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And in the minute I've been talking to you, 23 hires were made on Indeed, according to Indeed data worldwide. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility on Indeed.com at Indeed.com/to-do list. Just go to Indeed.com/to-do list right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/to-do list. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed. According to the CDC, 74% of the U.S. is overweight. That is a staggering number, and it means that the majority of adults, like myself, need to lose weight to improve our metabolic health. The good news is Prolon can help. Prolon is fasting with food. That's right. It's fasting, but it's with food. And it all starts with Prolon's 5-day program. Snacks, soups, and beverages are all designed to activate your body's fasting state. And it's unlike anything you've ever experienced. With Prolon, you get everything you need, prepackaged, ready to go. Every order of Prolon's 5-day program comes with 5 boxes labeled by day, so you know what to eat each day. Prolon is science-backed nutrition that helps support blood sugar levels and cardiovascular health. And change your relationship with food in just 5 days. I've had experience with fasting myself, both intermittent and otherwise, and Prolon makes it so much easier. It's not a diet, it's science. Science based on Nobel Prize-winning discoveries in medicine. Right now, Prolon is offering Beyond the To-Do List listeners 10% off their 5-day nutrition program. Go to ProlonLife.com/beyond. That's ProlonLife.com/beyond for this special offer. That's ProlonLife.com/beyond. What's something that works so well, it basically feels like magic? For me, I'm thinking air conditioning, noise-canceling headphones, definitely. Meeting-free Fridays? What about selling with Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your own shop stage to the first real store stage, you don't have to just sell your own stuff anymore. With Shopify Collective, you can curate products to sell from brands you love and give your customers more variety and your business more sales. Shopify is your no excuses business partner. Sell without needing to code or design. Just bring your best ideas and Shopify will help you open up shop. Shopify also helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/beyond. Again, go to shopify.com/beyond now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/beyond. We're going to take a quick break to say thank you to our sponsor this week. It's SetApp, the subscription for Mac apps that has an app for almost any task so you can stay in your flow and finish what you started. And SetApp's great for so many reasons. First off, the price. It's $9.99 a month, which means you're not paying thousands for separate licenses for all the different apps. It's just one flat monthly fee. And with that, in SetApp, you get over 180 high-quality apps in one. All of those apps have updates that come for free, and all of those apps are full-featured pro versions. Not only that, but these are the highest quality apps because there's a dedicated curation team at SetApp that does the discovery and testing for you. So SetApp makes it easy to get those best tools when you need them because they're already in SetApp. So make sure to check out SetApp. You can try it free for 7 days. Again, that's SetApp.com. There really is an app for almost any task you can think of so you can stay in your flow and finish what you started. That's SetApp.com.
So I'm seeing a little bit of a correlation here in terms of these three words with the other three, but don't like hold me to that by any means. but let me see if I can correlate. So productivity being output divided by input, I kind of see that. I mean, some people would say, oh, that's the doing. That's output. That's doing. That's work. But and then somebody would say, well, efficiency, doing things optimized or optimizing things, that would be thinking, Because if you're thinking about it and you're studying whatever the process, the workflow, whatever you want to call it, then you're taking it to its next level of, you know, possibilities in terms of whatever it is you're doing. You're doing it more efficiently. You're doing it more optimized. And I should say this, you know, when you're optimizing things, you can put in less input and get more output. So there is a correlation between efficiency and productivity, for sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
But then when you get to effectiveness and doing the right things, I feel like that's the being, right? Like that's the – whatever the right thing is. I mean, it's partially thinking, I think.
Yeah.
I think, said the thinker, but doing the right things would come out of choices that you've thought through and then acted on, being, thinking, doing, by being first, right? Yeah. Like, I think, yes. I feel like, so I feel like in the same way that people go for productivity first, then optimizing that productivity, and then realizing, oh, I really should be aiming for effectiveness. It's the same thing with the doing first, then the thinking, and then the being, almost being backwards.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, really, though, it kind of folds back in on itself, right? Because
right.
If you get really productive and really efficient, but you've been aiming at the wrong things, you know, then you're not going to be either efficient or productive, right? Because you produced a whole bunch of stuff that ultimately wasn't worth producing. So maybe you could still be productive, but because you're going to end up doing a bunch more work to double back and go back or just do something else totally and abandon what you've done, then you're definitely not going to be efficient.
Well, and I would even say you were productive. You definitely were efficient. You were doing that.
You were short term efficient.
Yeah. Yes. I mean, you were doing that thing the most optimized you can do it. And boy, did you produce. You were productive. But effective, on the other hand, you did the wrong thing.
This is where it comes back to words again, right? Because it depends on what the target of that term is, yes. Right? When you said thing, that piqued my interest because it's like, okay, yes, you were definitely productive and effective. When it came, or productive and efficient when it came to doing that thing. But if you expand the scope of the word thing or the target of your study from like one process or one project to living a full life, then you're definitely not efficient. Because even though you were efficient in the short term on a goal, it wasn't a goal that was worth pursuing. And if you were lucky enough to realize it, then you've got to go back and do what they call in the industry scrap and rework, right? You've got to go back and fix the problems that you caused, or just at the very least figure out a new plan on what you're going to do now. And then maybe you can be effective, but you've done a bunch of work that didn't need to be done because the goals weren't worth it.
Now that we've gone round and round with three words and then three other words and, you know, kind of landed here, I'd love to go back to what are some of the components that you think the most important components? I know that being is the most important and then the other two parts don't worry about. But if somebody is reading through the book and decides to read the whole thing, like what of not just being, but also thinking and doing, would you think are the most important maybe pieces to start to to start thinking about as you, in other words, what would the key takeaway be for be, think, and do? And you can be more, there can be more than one for each of those sections, I guess.
Okay. I would say if I wanted to go section by section, the thinking part, I think really the most important thing to get from the thinking part, and even I can talk about just one essay in particular, there's one in there called Think Like No One Else. And it's got just, you know, surprisingly actionable for considering how I write ways of approaching this thing that we call thinking. And it kind of boils down to systematically keeping your mind open. And there's just different tips in there about how to approach everyday problems, how to look for problems, how to look for things that are outside of your wheelhouse, so to speak, and then try to connect those with things that are in your wheelhouse, and then being surprised and delighted by the different insights you can have, the power of analogy as a thinking tool, or like trying to make an analogy between two things that don't seem like they're analogous, that's been huge throughout my entire life and has helped me quite a bit. And really just open-mindedness, if it encapsulates all into one term, thinking effectively boils down to open-mindedness. And then this is where it folds back on itself again, because open-minded is a way of being too, right? It's a way of presenting yourself to the world. If I could sound really meditative and frou-frou for a little bit, open-mindedness is just, it's a posture that you take towards the world and all the various facts and fictions that are in it. As far as the do is concerned, asking questions would probably be the action that I think is most effective. It's asking questions of yourself, asking questions of other people. And maybe it's a little bit of cheating because that's almost like thinking, right? You're not really doing anything. You're just asking questions.
Right. Yeah.
but a lot of the advice that I give in these chapters, in the do section, talk about how to more effectively position yourself so that when you've got to do something, you're doing the right thing. So it's basically, it's talking about the topic of effectiveness. I have a chapter in there about a Schultz hour, which is something that I read about a couple years ago. George Schultz, who was the Secretary of State under, don't quote me because I might be wrong, Ronald Reagan, he had an hour every week where he essentially did what sounded like a David Allen-esque weekly review, but he wasn't just going over his projects and his actions. He was just thinking. What's interesting is, so George Schultz is this famous guy who is, you know, who dealt with thinking, but then his grandson went to work for Theranos. And at the time, George was also very heavily invested in Theranos, and that whole thing fell apart. And infamously, he was implicated as a person who just wouldn't listen to reason and wasn't open-minded enough to see what was actually going on, which was a huge fraud. So that's kind of off topic, but it's interesting because there's a way to take this actionable advice that's something so simple as like a weekly thought session and seem to just not use it in the right way. He probably came up with all sorts of great thoughts, but ultimately it led him astray. So there's always that warning attached to actionable little tidbits and quick wins.
It seems like it's exemplifying one of the things we've talked about on this show before, which is, and even just as recently as talking with Cal Newport, and one of the things that we didn't really dive too deep in on his new book, Digital Minimalism, was this section on solitude, though I alluded to it, where what George Schultz was doing, which while you were talking, I did look it up, and he was Secretary of State under President Ronald Reagan.
So there we go.
Wanted to confirm you there. That he's sitting there and thinking, but you know, it's one part he's sitting there and just being.
Yeah.
One, he's letting his brain, what's the word? Expand a brain because you're stretching it. So decompressing it, you're letting it decompress. So thinking is ancillary. It's more of a being thing, though thinking can happen. Definitely not doing, though. Although no. You can argue he's doing thinking and being. He's actively, thinking and doing, though also passive. So yeah, the active and passive in this is just it. Anyway, I do have to say, by the way, the book is so much better structured and laid out and what's the word, ordered than say a conversation can be, because a conversation's messy. It goes back and forth, and you come up with something as you're saying it, and so does the other person, and vice versa. But yeah, I just wanted to point that out there again. This is one of those practical ways of showcasing that yes, one person doing this thing still exemplifies like going in all three directions at once, in a sense.
Yeah, and that's the big joke of it, is right. Like I spent all this time like sorting through these essays and, you know, aside from the time writing them over the years, like just finding out where they go. And I figured out pretty quickly that it's like you could really put these in any of them, right? I mean, it's in some sense it's arbitrary, in some sense it's meaningful. But the big joke is that it's all of them are all three. I mean, you could really make an argument for any of them. And so, you know, go ahead and read and have a laugh.
Well, and I think, okay, so kind of in closing here, I want to point this out that in the same sense that they fold in on each other, let alone the other three words we brought up. You need to do all three. I mean, I know you were saying, you know, really focus in on B, and that's great. And I agree with you, because a lot of people don't take that time. I mean, if anything, that's the thing that's lacking in terms of the quote productivity conversation these days. It's a lot of focused in on doing, some secondary information and thought process going in on thought and thinking. Being kind of takes the back seat. So your book comes in and says, hey, being first. And that's great. But I think that this is, I mean, again, it's an ongoing conversation. I think all three things are present at all three at all times. Like we said, thinking is an action, which is a do. Being is an action, and that's a do. Thinking vice versa is also do. Anyway, you get what I'm saying.
I get it. Yep. You're doing all three all the time.
Yes.
And that's like, I start out the section on thinking by talking about just how weird it is, because we're doing it all the time, whether we want to or not. And sometimes that's part of the problem. But then at the same time, we're trying to, it's almost like a fire hose that's always running, mostly on full power. And then there's various times where we just hubristically expect to pick it up and then somehow control it and point it in the right direction within a matter of seconds. I mean, it's pretty ludicrous, right? But what can help you do that is just like getting used to how it's always flowing and flowing very hard, so that you can come at it with a little bit of caution and a little bit of knowledge about what's going on.
Yeah, man. Seriously, I know that we're going to have to talk again, but
I'd be happy to.
Yeah, but for now, I think the listeners had enough. And for those of you, I got to tell you, for those of you who made it through to the end of this episode, I applaud you. You are my people. I apologize, I guess. I don't know why. But
that's what I have to say.
I thoroughly appreciate you geeking out with us. And you should definitely pick up Mike's book, because not only does it delve into what we're talking about in this episode, it does it much better than this conversation can convey or even instill, like, meaning wise to you. I can tell you that I got lots more out of the book than even this conversation. And I just kind of said, hey, this conversation sucked. And that's not true. I'm just saying the book is something you can like sit and dwell on and be and think and do the reading. So there you go. I throw that out there too.
Oh,
Mike, this has been awesome. I know people can grab it on Amazon, and I'll link it up in the show notes and everything. Where else can we send people to MikeSturm.net, and where else? Anywhere else?
On Medium. Yeah. If you just go to medium.com/@MikeSturm, I believe is the URL, or you can just go to medium.com and search Mike Sturm, and I'll come up. Awesome. That's where I do all my writing these days.
Awesome. Mike, again, great talking with you. I know you're going to be back, because we'll have to dive deeper in other areas. I don't know. Anyway, yes. Mike, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thanks for having me, Eric. It was great.
Well, that's another podcast crossed off your podcast listening to-do list. I hope that you enjoyed this conversation with Mike Sturm and found something meaningful in the re-examining of the meaning of productivity, and are able to find something in this conversation about be, think, do, and what those components mean for your productivity. I can tell you right now that the book over on Amazon on Kindle is actually really cheap. It's currently $4.99. It's an easy grab. I'll link it up in the show notes. It is great reading. If you've made it this far in this episode, this is right up your alley, and it is mine as well. I did not yet reread the book, even though I had re-listened to this conversation, but in fact I am going to reread the book and dive deeper in this topic in hopes of finding even more great conversational fodder for future episodes. If you found this episode helpful, or you know someone else who wants to geek out on this topic like we did in this episode, please hit the share button on your podcast player app of choice, or head on over to the show notes at beyondthetodolist.com and hit the share button there. Thanks for sharing. Thanks for listening, and I'll see you next episode.